What is the issue that you addressed in your testimony that was submitted on behalf of the petitioners?
I focused on issue two, which is the inter-MTA factor.
We had a chance to hear Mr. Davis give a brief summary, but can you give a brief summary of inter-MTA for the commission, please?
Yes, and I have an exhibit to show for that. This map was included as part of my testimony. It's a map of the United States that shows the 51 MTAs, or major trading areas, in the United States. The ones that are highlighted there in the upper central U.S. are the ones of primary concern when calculating an inter-MTA factor for South Dakota. You can see from the map that South Dakota is covered by three different MTAs. The majority of South Dakota is in MTA 12, which is the Minneapolis MTA, and that's primarily the eastern two-thirds of the state. The western one-third of this state, then, is MTA 22, which is the Denver MTA. You can see there in a different color, but you can also see MTA 32 there is a small corner of the southeast portion of South Dakota, which is the Des Moines MTA. There's a couple other MTAs I show up there as well that are surrounding South Dakota but don't actually go into the state of South Dakota. This exhibit here shows a blow-up of the South Dakota and how the MTAs are situated in South Dakota and the surrounding states. For illustrative purposes, I've got a couple of phones here just to show basically what the how the FCC defines a local call for a cell phone and a toll call based on the MTAs.
And Mr. Thompson, I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt. For purposes of the record, can you identify which exhibit you're referring to in your testimony right now?
Yes, this was an exhibit I put in my rebuttal testimony, and it's LT-R-3.
Can I just get a clarification of how you're going to mark these? Is there going to be different numbers on these, or?
These are not confidential. They will be attached to his testimony, which we'll introduce at the end.
Okay.
This one's a little heavier.
So what exhibit would this be, just for the record, so we can...
This is identical for all of the companies and would be attached. It's LT-R-3. It would have been attached to Mr. Thompson's rebuttal testimony.
Yeah, do you have a number for that?
Oh, you can make it 57. It would be Petitioner's Exhibit 57.
Okay, thanks.
The rebuttal testimony would be 57, but this is the attachment.
Correct.
So just as an example here, I'll move out of the way. If we were to have a cell phone user that's standing in Fargo, for example, and call a landline phone in Woonsocket, since it originated and terminated in the same MTA, MTA 12, that would be considered a local call if based on the FCC rules. Even if it was intrastate in nature, let's just say it originated in, the cell phone user was in Watertown, and called that landline user in Woonsocket, which is a Santel territory, that would still be a local call, because regardless if it's inside the state or outside the state, as long as it originates and terminates within the same MTA, it's considered a local call. However, if the cell phone user happened to be in, let's say, Des Moines and made that call, you can see it crossed an MTA boundary, and since it crossed an MTA boundary, that would be considered a toll call for terms of the jurisdictionalizing that call. And since it also was between states, it would be an interstate toll call. If the cell phone user happened to be in Rapid City and make that same call, you can see it also crossed an MTA boundary, which would make it an inter-MTA call. Since it's an inter-MTA call, again, that would be a toll call, but in this case, it would be an intrastate inter-MTA call, since it not only crossed the MTA boundary, but it originated and terminated within the state of South Dakota. One complexity that the FCC has recognized with regard to cell phones is obviously they're mobile, and so the question becomes, well, what if that mobile user starts his conversation in Rapid City and travels to Pierre during the course of that call? Is that an intra-state inter-MTA call, or is that a local call because he ended up in the same MTA? And what the FCC has said on that, with that respect, is that it would be a toll call because of the fact that it's based on where the caller was when he started the call, when he initiated the call. One other complexity that comes into play when doing inter-MTA analysis or studies or billing is the fact that it's also difficult to determine the exact location of the wireless caller. Oftentimes the cellular networks are not well equipped to be able to determine if where exactly that person is standing. It's much easier to tell what tower they connected to. So what will oftentimes happen for these studies is they'll use the location of the cell tower that he happened to connect to. So if that caller happened to be in Rapid City, he's probably connected to a cell tower in the Rapid City area. And so the FCC's considered the cell tower, the connecting cell tower at the start of the call, a reasonable proxy for determining if that call is inter-MTA or intra-MTA. But the goal of an inter-determination of the inter-intra-MTA is really the location of the one initiating the call and the one terminating the call. The question is, were they in the same MTA or were they in different MTAs? And if they're in different MTAs, then the question becomes, were they in the same state or did it go between states to determine the jurisdiction of that call?
Mr. Thompson, you've described for us some of the types of inter-MTA calls that occur. Can you talk about what factors influence the amount of inter-MTA traffic that's delivered by a wireless company to a landline company?
Okay. Well, that call that I gave an example for here from Rapid City to Woonsocket, if the wireless carrier had a network that would span that geographic area, oftentimes they'll deliver that call across their own network and deliver it to the telephone company intermingled with their local traffic, which oftentimes happens here in South Dakota. If it was a small regional carrier, they may actually hand that off to an inter-exchange carrier and deliver it by an IXE to the telephone company, where the telephone company then is normally paid their terminating access, which is the appropriate rate for a toll call. So typically the larger the wireless carrier, the more inter-MTA you have, because typically their networks are larger and they're able to transport that call over their own network without using an inter-exchange carrier. So one factor that could influence how much inter-MTA you have is the network of the wireless company. How far can they transport that wireless call before terminating it to that end user? There's other factors such as just their routing principles. How often do they hand that off to an inter-exchange carrier? For a large wireless carrier, it's possible that the caller could have been down in Kansas City or St. Louis or Washington, D.C., and that call could potentially come across their entire network to get to that end user in South Dakota and be terminated across those local facilities rather than handing it off to an inter-exchange carrier. So a lot of it could be dictated by the principles that are used by the wireless carrier and how they deliver the call. Another factor could be how many MTAs are present in the state or closely located, how closely located you might be to an MTA boundary. And you can see somebody up in Fargo, for example, they may not be that close to an MTA boundary. It might be more likely for the wireless carrier to hand that traffic to an inter-exchange carrier rather than delivering it locally, as compared to potentially somebody, let's say you can see over here by Bison or down here at Beersford where they're situated close to an MTA boundary, you tend to get more inter-MTA traffic or more traffic that goes between the two MTAs. Another factor could be traffic patterns. If somebody on, let's say, the south side of this MTA line between the Minneapolis and the Des Moines MTA, maybe their communities of interest are north of that MTA boundary, so they tend to get a lot of calls from one MTA into the other MTA, and like I said earlier, the FCC has determined that inter-MTA traffic is non-local or toll traffic.
Mr. Thompson, we have five petitioners in this particular case. Can you demonstrate using this exhibit how each of the petitioners is located in respect to the various MTA boundaries in South Dakota?
I do have a separate exhibit for each one of those companies. Can I show those?
And are those exhibits attached to your testimony?
They are.
Yes.
Exhibits I'm about to show here were all attached. My direct testimony is LT-D-3. And basically what these show is a blow-up of each one of the petitioner's service territories with respect to the MTA. This first one that I'm showing is McCook, and you can see geographically where McCook here is situated with respect to the two MTA boundaries. And keep in mind that the southern edge of South Dakota here is also bordering the Omaha MTA. So those are the MTAs of interest when determining McCook's inter-MTA factor. This shows Beersford Municipal Telephone Company and how they're situated with respect to the MTA. And you can see, as we'll get into a little bit later as well, that they're a little bit unique when you look at the five petitioners. They actually have the town of Beersford, shown by this blue crosshatch area here, is actually straddling the MTA boundary. So part of Beersford is in the Des Moines MTA, and part of Beersford is in the Minneapolis MTA. As it turns out, if you look on a per-customer basis and a geographic basis, about 20% of the Beersford customers are north of that line, so it would be in the Minneapolis MTA, and about 80% are south of the line, so it would be in the Des Moines MTA. This shows Kennebec Telephone and how they're situated with respect to the MTAs. And you can see Kennebec is towards the western side of the Minneapolis MTA and getting somewhat close to the red line there, which is the Denver MTA. So any calls that would be received by a Kennebec Telephone customer from, let's say, Rapid City, which is where one of their areas of influence is, would be an inter-MTA call. see Santel Communications Cooperative here, depicted by, again, the blue. We show the blow up there. And you can see that they have 10 exchanges, as Mr. Weber talked about earlier. The bulk of their exchanges are located within the Minneapolis MTA, although you can see a small part of the southern piece of TRIP actually goes down into the Des Moines MTA. And finally, this is West River. West River, you can see how their exchanges, I've got them blown up here as well. You can see that the very eastern part of Meadow and Lemon exchanges do bleed over a little bit into the Minneapolis MTA. However, a large portion of their company is in the Denver MTA. Another thing to keep in mind, that they do border another MTA way on the edge of the South Dakota border. So they would have some inter-MTA traffic, most likely due to that, although that would be interstate inter-MTA.
Mr. Thompson, how do you propose that the petitioners in this particular case determine the amount of inter-MTA traffic that is delivered to their companies?
There's three basic methods for determining the amount of inter-MTA traffic, and I'll briefly describe each of those three. The first method of determining the inter-MTA traffic would be to use the raw CDR records that you can get from the wireless network. Like I said, one key factor is the location of the caller, or secondarily, as a proxy to the location of the caller, the connecting cell site at the start of the call. Though that information is available in the wireless network, it's never passed when that call is terminated to the landline carrier. So in that scenario I drew up there earlier, like a call from Rapid City to Woonsocket, the wireless carrier's network has the information about the connecting cell site at the start of the call, although in the signaling stream, the SS7, which is what's commonly used today, that information's never passed. So the landline carrier does not know, when they terminate that call, what the location of that caller was or the connecting cell site of that caller. So the best method to be able to determine that would be to get those CDR records from the wireless carrier. Then it's real clear exactly where that caller was standing at the time. Another approach that's used is what they call the telephone numbers method. And the telephone numbers method is something that's been pushed by various industry groups recently as a way to be able to determine this. And basically what the telephone numbers method says is, we don't know the exact location of the wireless caller. However, as a reasonable estimate, we're just going to use the telephone number to be able to determine where their location is. The fundamental concept there is that most wireless calls are made from near your home location. So if you have a Rapid City telephone number that's terminating to a Woonsocket number, you would assume that that caller was standing in Rapid City when he made that call, or at least somewhere in that vicinity. As long as he's in the same MTA and the same state, you still wouldn't have any errors in your analysis. So if that customer had gone up to Visor and made that call, you still wouldn't introduce any errors because he's still within the same MTA and state. You wouldn't misrepresent him. However, if he would go to Sioux Falls and make that same call, that would be a local call, and you would mischaracterize that call as an inter-MTA call if you base it on telephone numbers. The idea being, there's probably as many people from Sioux Falls that went to Rapid City as vice versa, and they would tend to cancel out. Another shortcoming of the telephone numbers method is it doesn't take into account porting. But again, it appears from what we've seen that that tends to wash out as well, because there will be some that get mischaracterized as one wireless customer when they're really another because they've ported, but there might be another one that ported the other direction that you didn't characterize as well. when we performed the studies using telephone numbers methods and compared it to actual CDR records we've been able to get from the wireless companies, they tend to be relatively similar. So we feel that we have a high confidence that the telephone numbers method gives us a reasonable approximation. The third method that is also mentioned in the paragraph 1044 of the local competition order says that you can use a POI method, or a point of interface. And obviously the goal here is to determine when somebody crosses an MTA boundary for the originating caller and the terminating caller. If you're in an environment where your POI would be a good estimation of the local location of that caller, which there could be some instances where that would be the case, the POI may be a reasonable approach. However, if you envision South Dakota, where your POI, you likely have a single POI where you're accepting traffic from the wireless carrier. That wireless carrier could be anywhere in the state or in the country, and you would mischaracterize their call almost all the time because that POI is a very poor representation of the location of the caller. Obviously, the connecting tower is a much better indicator of the location of the caller, which is the goal that you're trying to get to.
So the three methods you've just described, which one do you believe to be the most accurate?
The using the CDR data from the wireless carrier would be the most accurate, because then you actually have the tower location of the wireless caller, as well as you're accounting for things like ported calls that I had mentioned earlier. And the second most accurate would be the telephone numbers method, or what we'll oftentimes call the SS7 method.
Can you summarize that telephone numbers method that you utilized for predicting the inter-MTA factors that have been advanced on behalf of the petitioners here?
Yes, the telephone numbers method that was used to perform the analysis that was included in my testimony basically used the equipment that's located at SDN Communications, which monitors these signaling links that I mentioned earlier, the SS7 links. That will actually measures every call that originates or terminates at one of the ILEX or the six ILEX or five ILEX that we're talking about in this proceeding. What we ended up doing is we took in 2004, about 2 weeks worth of time in 2004, and gathered all of the calls that originate and terminate. We sorted out the telephone numbers that were associated with, at the time was Western Wireless, which is now Altel. We took those calls and we categorized them as to their origin based on the telephone number. So each telephone number that was originated by an Altel telephone number, we assigned to a specific rate center where that telephone number came from. Based on the rate center of where that telephone was at, we assigned it a state and an MTA. Once we knew the state and the MTA, we knew where it was terminating. It was terminating to, one of these five companies. Then we categorized each one of those calls as to an intra-MTA call, which we considered to be local, obviously, or an inter-MTA call. So if the rate center of where it originated was in a different MTA than the rate center, the landline rate center where it terminated, then we characterize it as an inter-MTA call. If it was an inter-MTA call, we broke it down to one more level of resolution by characterizing it into intrastate or interstate. And so using that telephone numbers method and analyzing those calls for that approximately 2 week period, we then were able to calculate a percentage of the total traffic that was inter-MTA in nature. So for example, if we had 100,000 minutes, we may have found that 90,000 of them originated and terminated in the same MTA. Again, regardless if it was within South Dakota or outside, as long as it was in the same MTA, we considered that to be local traffic. The other 10,000 minutes was between MTA, and we took that 10,000 minutes and divided it between how much was intrastate and interstate.
In this particular case, does your testimony contain the results of the SS7 analysis or the telephone numbers analysis that you've conducted for each of these companies?
Yes, it does.
Can you go through those with the commission?
Yes, I can.
Do I have exhibits on those as well? I think I do. No. Maybe I didn't have exhibits on those.
I don't think I have any boards of those. I do have them as part of my testimony, and I can reference the specific. It's LT-D-4, and we did have this marked as confidential. So I can go through the results, but we probably...
How about, if I may, Ms. Weiss, here at 5:15, he's only got 10 more minutes if we're going to be flipping back. I don't know what time he was thinking he had to get out of here. He told me 5:15 during the break, he thought, or 5:20.
Yeah, 5:20, 25. It'll take all of that probably to go through each one of these.
Okay, well, I didn't think you'd get through them necessarily. I was recommending maybe we break now, but if he can get through them, I can still be comfortable leaving.
I think I can probably, that'd probably be about the end of it for tonight, I would imagine, once I get through these.
So we need to go off the web.
We do need to go off the web for this.